Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Eric Olson. It's America's Most Haunted. Once again, thanks for joining us. We are here every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, talking the paranormal world in the very, very broadest sense. Speaking of which, we are heading off in yet another direction this evening. It's going to be great. We're talking about Screambox with Ray Cannella, a.k.a. Rayzilla, who spent 10 years as a programmer at Sci-Fi Channel. So that will be very, very interesting to talk about. But now he's the programmer and the host of Screambox, and this is a very, very interesting service. Seems to be the wave of the future. Basically, right now, it's just a channel. It's just a location on YouTube, but soon, it will be on all kinds of different platforms. It's a really interesting collection of horror movies, horror commentary. You got Ray on there doing his funky thing, talking about this, talking about that. With the horror world, Screambox is the ultimate horror movie subscription channel featuring unedited, commercial-free horror movies. The service currently features over 130 uncut, full-length horror movies from around the world that can be streamed through any mobile device. Your own horror library on the go, with new films added weekly. Screambox includes films like A Tale of Two Sisters, Night of the Living Dead, Puppet Master, The Hillside Strangler, and I'm guessing 126 more, plus interviews and behind-the-scenes features pertaining to the horror genre. This vertical video portal is designed to satiate horror fans, taking them deeper into the genre and offering them a more engaging way to interact with the horror community and horror films. And coming up this summer, in just a few months, Screambox will be moving or expanding from YouTube to Xbox, Roku, and iPad. Holy cats, we have Ray Cannella, and I believe he has joined us. But first, the world-famous haunted housewife, Teresa Argy. How are you, Teresa?
I'm good. I'm just loving this beautiful spring weather we're having.
Yeah, we had a whiteout.
Where? Where is there beautiful spring weather? Where?
God.
It's spring break and there's like 2 inches of snow on the ground. I had to shovel my car off to get it out of the driveway to go to the store today. I'm like, really? Come on now. You know, enough is enough.
It's been in the 20s all day. We're already to Tuesday of our spring break, and I don't think it's been above, certainly hasn't been above 40 since they got out of school on Friday. Yeah, it's just ridiculous. Well, Ray, welcome. So nice to speak with you and meet you virtually.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you warm?
This weather... This weather actually is not very good for me, given that I am this twitching, hideous mess of a reptilian person. I need it moist. I need it, humid. I need it dank. I need it dark. And this just really kind of slows me down a great deal. I feel like hibernating. But I know that spring is around the corner and that the land will bloom again, hopefully. And in the meantime,
yeah,
I'm putting
some
up.
Decade. Ugh. Yeah, it's been, it's really, we've had a, God, well, everywhere pretty much, I think, in the greater Northeast has had a pretty similarly bad time. And, of course, it's stretched all the way down south this year. This is really one of the worst winters in decades, and yeah, you hear all.
I'd just like to say for the record that it sucks out loud. So
sucks hose water, man.
And only more reason to stay indoors and watch horror movies
Absolutely.
And listen to podcasts And all sorts of good things, because I can't, you know, I can't, if I step outdoors, my tail breaks off. It's ugly. You don't want to see it. And it's frightening the children, people clutching children, running away from me. It's not a good sight. So so I stay indoors. And, yeah, and I just watch horror movies at an unhealthy rate, really.
So does the tail grow back?
Yes, it does.
Thank goodness.
Yes, it does. It's a defense mechanism.
Being reptilian, I figured you would have that advantage.
Yes, yes. It made it difficult while working in cable. Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe, actually, I probably just fit right in, you know?
Yeah, showbiz, you know. Hey,
I'll back that thought up for a minute.
we want to talk about your years of sci-fi, because We have had a ongoing and rather deep, if occasionally contentious, relationship with sci-fi since we've became America's Most Haunted. So I am very eager to hear your thoughts on your decade there. But first, we got to talk about Screambox. So why don't you just kind of give us the bottom line, tell us what's going on. How did this come to be? What a cool idea.
Well, first of all, I think what we're seeing with services like Screambox, and you know, I'm going to lump us in with the other services because I think that we bear a great deal of resemblance to Netflix, to Hulu, to Amazon, in the manner in which we present entertainment. I like to think that we do a better job of presenting horror to the public than any other service really that I can think of. If you try to watch something on Hulu Plus, if you go to touch the controls, if you want to fast forward, you want to rewind, you get stuck watching a commercial, or maybe they freeze the controls on you completely. And at Screambox, none of that goes on. When you go to Screambox to watch horror movies, okay, pause, rewind, you can do whatever you want. There's no ads, there's no pop-ups, there's no commercials. No one is cutting anything out of the films. What we offer at Screambox for horror fans, my competitors simply can't offer. It is the genre. I'm a purist when it comes to the genre. And that goes, back to my days at Sci-Fi Channel. I take very seriously the preservation and the presentation of the genre, because it has a very, very, very rich history. And as far as one of my hopes, one of my goals with Screambox is to build really what I like to call a horror-torium, you know?
Ooh.
A place where you can go not to just be entertained, but to study the genre, to examine the genre, to be exposed to the genre, because there is... It's one of, horror is probably, perhaps one of the more dismissive genres of entertainment. It's very easy to back away from horror. And that's the challenge for those of us who work in the genre, particularly for those of us who want to produce films and create content. You're already working in a genre where people are a little hesitant to approach. You know, horror, it's not like a comedy. It's not like a family film. So there's the challenge. And Screambox offers people an opportunity to go and examine the genre. That's what I hope, anyway.
And it's very reasonable. It's $2.99 a month, is that right?
Correct. It's $2.99 a month. Which is I think you mentioned the number of films we have available. We actually have many more than that available on the channel now. The channel continues to grow. Yes, it's $2.99 a month. The first 2 weeks are free, and it gives you an opportunity to jump into the channel and take a look around and see what films we offer. My hideous taste in entertainment knows no bounds. I make no excuses for my taste in entertainment. You're gonna find the classics. You're gonna find 70s grindhouse. You're gonna find the wonderful full moon films from the 80s. You're gonna find independent films from the 90s, right up to the 21st century independent films. There's no filter at Screambox, unlike other horror services, particularly on cable. On cable, there's an enormous filter. I struggle watching horror on cable TV. I truly do. Even Walking Dead and American Horror Story. Because once the commercials hit, it bounces me out of the horror.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. It was so odd in watching some of these more, adult-oriented, shall we say, TV shows on channels that have commercials. When I first saw that, I couldn't believe it. It drove me, why would they advertise on this show? Well, certainly we know.
But it's not so much that, but the mechanics of horror, the elements of horror are moments of tension, moments of suspense, moments of dread. You are building these things within the narrative of the story, and then all of a sudden the screen goes blank, and it's a friggin' Burger King commercial, and everyone's jumping up and down, and they got their hamburgers, and they're happy, and it bounces me out of the damn horror. Okay?
Yes, absolutely. You're right. I think for a lot of people,
Even reaching for the remote, if I DVR the show, even reaching for the remote, to me is a disruption. Now maybe perhaps I have a severe case of ADD, and there's always that possibility. As a matter of fact, I think I missed my meds today. But the point being that horror, I can't get bounced out of the horror. I prefer to watch those particular programs on streaming services. For me. What Screenbox represents is the natural progression of communications, the natural progression of the distribution of entertainment. The newspaper replaced the town crier, and I think that what we're seeing in the digital ecosystem is channels and services like Screenbox are beginning to grow and grow and grow because it's basically a VOD world out there. People want their entertainment a la carte, and I'm here to give it to them.
So how many movies are on there now? If 130 is wrong.
One scream at a time. One delicious scream at a time, I'll give it to them.
How many films do you think are on there now?
I believe we have over 200.
Outdated. Cool. Now, how are you picking them?
I would say well over 200, I think, at this point.
How are you selecting them? What is your method of obtaining them? And once they're on the service, are they always on the service, or do they come and go?
Well, first of all, to answer the first question, I like to use chicken bones. And, I have an old wooden cup. I like to burn incense. And then I read the chicken bones, and I select the films. After that, the movies are acquired for a window. And so some movies will come and go, but that's the nature of the business itself. You can't find South Park on Netflix anymore; completely gone. And that's just because contracts and agreements expire. So,
I'm also interested in how. What are the nuts and bolts? Because I'm not super mobile oriented. I'm still kind of a desktop guy. I don't really. I mean, I got a phone, but I basically just use it to make calls.
So tell us how you got a couple of Progresso soup cans and a string that you're using there. What do you got going on? What's happening?
I have the next generation. After that, after the string.
The beauty about being on YouTube is that we're available on any device that receives YouTube.
Oh, okay.
It's that simple.
Got it.
It's that simple. My iPad gets YouTube. My phone gets YouTube. All you need to do is subscribe. And then anywhere that you get a signal on any device, you can watch horror movies. You can watch I travel around a little bit. I go to a couple of horror conventions here and there. I went to a film festival interviewed some directors, got to meet some super fans. I've been attending horror and science fiction conventions since I was about, since I was like 12 years old. You know,
wow.
Even younger, I think. I think I started going to conventions when I was maybe 10 years old. I started going to horror and science fiction conventions. My poor parents. But, well, I'm vindicated now in the eyes of my family because I do this for a living. You know, believe me, when I was in college, my family was terrified. You know, the Raymond still watches those movies, right? And they would say, yes, Raymond still watches those movies. At least I turned it into something.
Well, going back to that, because that is always a source of, we're always interested kind of in origin stories. What was the original impulse? What is the fascination, your fascination with horror based upon, or where did it come from?
Wow, what an interesting question. Where did my fascination with horror come from? I think that, well, first of all, I'm also a tremendous fan of comedies. I love comedies. I love stand-up comics. I like to go to comic clubs and see stand-up. My wife and I both enjoy stand-up comedy. And I feel that the line between comedy and horror is actually quite thin. I see it as an extremely thin line. So I think that my passion for horror and comedy are almost one and the same. The difference, yes, they're two different emotions, but they intertwine. When we get on a roller coaster and we take a ride, we scream, we scream, we scream, and then when the ride's over, we laugh. When we're in the theater and we see a horror film, we scream, and then we laugh because they made us. I feel that that line between the two is very, very, very thin. Now, also, my father was an entertainer. He was a drummer. He played drums in the band. But when the band took a break, my father had a magic act. So he was a magician as well. So this sense of illusion, of tricking an audience into thinking that they're seeing something, I think also played a part in my fascination with the genre. My father would take me to Lou Tanner's magic shop in Manhattan, a world famous magic shop where I would see Randy there, you know, performing tricks and all sorts of things. So I had that also going on at the time. And then when I was 9 years old, I saw King Kong for the very first time, and that was it. That turned me into the creature I am today. So.
Well, that's very interesting. I'm going to have to ponder that, the relationship between comedy and horror. I do know what you mean. I viscerally was sort of feeling what when you were talking about that, because I guess they're both, there's a sense of release. And you know, they say comedy is tragedy plus time. So, you know,
right.
there's part of it
exactly.
Right there.
And it was either, I don't want to misquote, but it was either, I want to say it was Plato, who said that the purpose of a drama placed the audience in a state of horror. And I always found that very fascinating, that choice of words.
Really?
A
yes.
State
it's extreme.
Of horror. I always found that fascinating. That choice of words. I hope I have the quote correct. But it was a number of things. And I remember the day I became a monster movie fan. It was Thanksgiving Day, 1972. I was 9 years old, and I saw King Kong for the very first time on TV, and it had the most profound effect on me. I simply became obsessed with the genre at that point. And I needed to know how it was done. That was the other part. I understood at that age that, of course, it's a movie and it's, you know, it's in black and white, big, you know, big gorilla running around eating people, climbing the Empire State Building. I was 9 years old. I understood that it was simply a movie. But I needed to know how it was done. And perhaps that need to know how it was done, how the trick was done, came from my father. You know?
Right.
Being the magician.
Sure.
Being the magician, and I got to know how some of the tricks were done. So, you know, all of that, it's like a big soup, you know. Then, you know, throw in heaping amounts of self-medication during my college days. And
you were the only one.
And there you
were the only one doing
that.
Very interesting tale. Teresa, I'm sure you have many questions and comments.
Absolutely. First of all, it's a pleasure to talk to you. This has already been a lot of fun. I'm sitting here, I'm trying to write down the witty things you say, but, you know, I can't write fast enough, so I'll just have to listen back when I transcribe the show. But anyway, we were talking about this on-demand horror, Screenbox. So all these movies you can watch, and you're talking about the problem we have with watching things on television, and that is the commercials and the breaks and the break and the tension. And do you remember, and I'm showing my age, but Ray, I'm the same age as you. I figured out by your timeline there. Remember when cable was, there were no commercials, and you could watch something on cable and watch it all the way through, and that was the big selling point. You watched this movie, so you didn't get to see it in the theater. Now it's on cable, a horror movie especially, or a mystery, and that tension is there. It isn't broke up by the Burger King commercial or whatever. And yeah. I miss that. That is one of the beauties of watching something on demand. And I have a Netflix subscription, and I enjoy it. But, again, it is very limited, especially in the horror realm with what I like. I like that it does have some of the TV shows. And I was wondering, is Screenbox, is that going to have any of the television programs, the horror television programs, or is it strictly going to be movies?
No, my hope, actually, we are already, you know, working on acquiring series as well. Like I said, this is just a thought, you know, if I'm allowed a moment to have a pie in the sky kind of idea of what Screenbox could be, I have to go back to, again, to the phrase of a horatorium, literally a museum. Literally a museum that would encompass all things, I feel. I feel that it's a destination because being, you know, 20 years in cable, you know, in the genre, I think there's a need for a focal point. I think that there's a need for a place where all of these smaller pockets of people can go. And when it comes to the type of service that we are, when you look at any time there has been an enormous shift in communications, in media, the oldest models feel it first. And what I mean by that is I mean the broadcast channels and the cable channels are right now feeling the pinch of the digital disruption. Other services like HBO, which you mentioned as far, you know, HBO, you can still get your horror uncut, unedited, without commercial interruption. So the younger business model, the subscription model, HBO, Showtime, Stars, Cinemax, Epix, these guys aren't feeling it as badly as advertiser-based. Again, the oldest forms feel the pressure first. Ask the folks over at Borders Books, how's it going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, like,
the freaking post office is about to shut down. The post office.
Yeah,
okay.
Newspapers, post office, everything. It's going.
So unless you're living in a tremendous bubble, you see that there is quite possibly, in my opinion, the most radical shift happening right now since television itself. And thankfully, I have two teenage daughters. Thankfully, I have two teenage daughters who I sat and watched very closely, and I watched them obliterate the way that I used television. Obliterated. It was astonishing to me what they were doing. And this went off in my head like an alarm. It really did. honestly, honest to God, it really went off in my head. I got an Xbox. I got a PS3. I started jumping in. Now I'm somewhat addicted to a few video games. But nonetheless, at my advanced years, I could be bothered with this stuff. You know? I find it exciting. I find it interesting. So what Screenbox represents for me is the natural evolution of the distribution of entertainment. Really. It's a VOD world. People want their entertainment a la carte. You get, Teresa, how many channels do you get at home with cable?
Well, I get probably about 1,300, but most of them are repeats or other versions or on-demand versions of the channels I already have. And the problem, even with HBO, yeah, sure, you can get your horror uncut if that happens to be the show that you want to watch. If it's not the show you want to watch, then you don't. And
well, they also
show
a lot of good movies, though. You get your features and stuff like that. But the point I want to get to, and I don't mean to cut you off, but the point I want to get to is that if you took a piece of paper right now and you wrote down all of the shows that you watch, you know, that you're dedicated to on cable with the channel alongside of it, I'll bet you $10 that you watch between 9 and 14 channels, and that's it.
That's pushing it, yeah. That's it.
Okay, that's it. So the rest of the stuff that you're paying for, you're not using. You're not watching. In my mind, that's unsustainable, particularly the parent of two teenage daughters, because neither one of them have cable. They don't want it. They want the internet. And so that's why we're seeing the MSOs, you know, taking charge, the end of net neutrality, things I won't go into tonight. But to me, this is the natural progression of the distribution of entertainment, be it horror, be it comedy, be it drama, be it whatever. I really feel like this is a VOD world. It's an a la carte world, and you know, I'd love for folks to come by Screenbox. And now's the best time to join because we're growing and we're about to expand over to Xbox. And these are the fun years. The early years are the fun years because you experiment and you throw stuff at the wall and you have a good time with it and you see hopefully what people respond to.
Well, it's especially fun because you get to be the ringmaster of all this. I mean, your personality shines through, and I mean, you know, you're literally there on screen, and you're also there figuratively because your fingerprints are all over the movie selections as well.
Well, no, it's not just I, but that's doing all the acquiring. We have a marvelous team of folks. And a very dedicated, wonderful, wonderful team of folks, and I do what I can to help them to be more familiar with the genre. My wife likes to remind me that no one cares as much about this stuff as me. She keeps me humble. She says, "Raymond, no one cares. No one cares as much as you, Raymond." You know.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Not about horror movies, but about other things, you know. Like, gosh, shut up. No one cares. Speaking of teenage daughters, my one teenage daughter was telling me to just shut up all day today. She was not in a good mood.
Oh, no. I consider myself incredibly, incredibly, incredibly lucky. First and foremost, to get paid. To get paid in your chosen profession is one thing. But to be a part of the birth of a channel, the launch of a channel, is indeed a privilege. And now I've had that privilege twice. Twice. How lucky am I? How fortunate am I? I was there before Sci-Fi Channel was on the air. I was part of the team assembling the pieces to launch this damned thing back in 1992.
Wow.
Before we had the internet, you know, before there was the interwebs and everything else, we were using DOS for crying out loud. back in the day. I had hair back in the day. But, you know, so I had the privilege of being a part of that team and launching Sci-Fi Channel. It was one of the most exciting opportunities I've ever had in any facet of life. We had a big party at Madison Square Garden the night we launched the channel. There were two parties. There was an A party and a B party. And, yeah, I got stuck at the B party. But regardless, we had a damn good time at Madison Square Garden. Boy, did I get snockered. So, and now, 20 years later, you know, again, I get asked to become a member of a team to start something, to start up something new. I'm extremely fortunate.
So, how long have you been with Screenbox? How long has Screenbox been up, first of all, and then have you been with it from the beginning? And I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Well, no, not at the very beginning. No. I was asked to come in around, you know, it's very similar to Sci-Fi. I was brought in, about 30 days out from launch. About 30 days, 60 days out from launch, I was asked to come in and do what I can and to, you know, program and host the channel. The hosting part was and continues to be a little bit of a struggle for me because I spent so many years, you know, behind a desk, and I asked the folks when the whole Screenbox thing started. I said, you know, you sure you want to put me in front of a camera? You know, not a lot of people would advise that. And so that's been the one, you know, I know the genre, the learning curve as far as programming a network in the digital world, that was pretty enormous also. But the hosting thing, I'm still trying to make my way through.
Well, I think your combination of your knowledge and just the fact you're clearly a self-confident, if also self-deprecating to a certain extent person. So I think that actually makes you easy to watch because you're not some, you know, obvious, real young, pretty boy type who's just there for those reasons. People know you're there because, man, you know this shiz and you know it well and you love it and you're no one cares as much as you, Raymond.
Yeah, I've always put myself in the position of the audience. What would I like to see? What would I like to hear? What would I be interested in? I've always put myself in the place of the audience because I kind of think that, you know, I'd like to think that I'm no different than anybody else that's watching out there. My goodness me, you know, I don't think I lead any more of a different life than anybody else, and I happen to like this material, and so, you know, I do my best to try and think like a fan and, you know, hopefully give the folks what they want. And you know, the inventory in Screenbox, the movie inventory is a good example of this because the movie inventory consists of things that I could have never have done in cable. You know, that was kind of that's a nice reward for me as a programmer, is to be able to do things that I couldn't do before. And specifically with foreign cinema, I am an enormous fan of foreign horror, be it from Brazil, be it from Asia, be it from Spain, be it from the UK. I love foreign horror films. And now with Screenbox, I have that opportunity to present international horror subtitled, something that you can't do on cable, marvelous films that could never be acquired and aired on cable simply because they're subtitled. They're in another language.
Right.
You know. Now, the next generation doesn't care about that. They're acclimated through gaming, through their love of Japanese animation, I feel the next generation doesn't have the same hang-up as my current generation does.
So what are your favorite horror movies?
That's like asking me which one of my kids is my favorite.
I know. 10. Pick 10. And you can hop around. They can represent various subgenres. You don't have to say, these are the 10. You could say, this is my favorite, you know, from the various
subgenres. I like anything.
Subgenres.
The goal of a horror film, for me, the goal of a horror film is to make the audience feel uncomfortable. That's the goal of a horror film. Not just uncomfortable as they're watching the horror film, but uncomfortable after they've watched the horror film. That's the cherry on top, by the way, if you can do that.
Take it home
part.
With you.
You know, that's the best part. So for me, the things that make me most uncomfortable to watch are witches, witch movies. Witches bother me, man. Yeah, they bother the heck out of me. Witches always frighten me. I don't know why. But then again, we all have that. We all have that one thing that bothers us. Clowns,
sure.
Snakes, Republicans, all sorts of things, you know. No offense, folks. These are the jokes. Thanks for coming. Don't forget to tip the waitress on the way out. Just jokes, people. Just jokes. Nothing but love. Some folks are afraid of different things, and I find that fascinating. I love to delve into what frightens people, what really, really, really frightens people. But for me, it's witches. So my favorite horror films are the ones that really feature witches. Dario Argento's Suspiria is right at the top. Mario Bava's The Mask of Satan with Barbara Steele is a personal favorite. I would go back to Argento again, Inferno. Inferno is a wonderful film. So witch movies, even a creature feature like Pumpkinhead, the original Pumpkinhead, the
right.
Witch in Pumpkinhead scared the crap out of me more than the monster did. Haggis, the witch, remember her?
Yes.
Let it
interesting.
Pass, let it pass.
Well, maybe the witches seem more realistic, you know, more plausible to you than some of the other things. For me, it would probably be demon-based things because, man, if that's real, that what's scarier than that, you know?
Yeah, yes. Sure.
I mean, from a religious angle. Teresa, dear.
Did we lose Teresa?
Oh, no.
What bothers you? I mean, what really makes... If the goal of a horror film is to make a person uncomfortable, what would make you uncomfortable?
What bothers me the most in horror films is the things that are actually probably closer to humans doing things that are really horrific more than a monster. The more human monster, the more frightening it is to me. Godzilla, you know, yeah, scary, but monsters don't scare me as much as bad human beings, such as clowns. Like, clowns are creepy. Clowns creep me out. But that kind of thing frightens me more than anything. Acts of nature, not so much. Monsters, demons, yes, because that kind of is a cross between something human and something inhuman, at least in my mind. So that scares me. But what really creeps me out probably more than anything is those creepy kid movies.
Uh-huh.
That's under my skin. Creepy kid movies does it for me every time. Ugh.
Well, I understand, you know, I totally get the thing about a non-paranormal, non-mythical, you know, no sort of supernatural element type story as being the one that bothers you the most. There's a collection of independent filmmakers right now who are gaining notoriety. They've created this subculture called Mumblegore. Are you familiar with that?
No, Mumblegore.
Yeah, Mumblegore.
No, me
Mumblegore.
Neither.
The point, and the films that fall into that category are films like Your Next. Did you see Your Next?
Yes.
By any chance, yes. Films like that fall into this category of mumblegore. And I guess what the point of mumblegore, the approach to mumblegore is horror, is why create monsters when man himself can be so monstrous? And that kind of, and I think that that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
It is.
Yeah. I highly recommend you see the remake of Maniac with Elijah Wood.
Yeah, lots of people are talking about that.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It is one of my favorite remakes, and I'm not a huge fan of remakes, but I put it at the top as one of my favorite, absolute top five remakes of all time. Elijah Wood is excellent. The production is excellent. This movie is difficult to watch. It's very difficult to watch. You got to put your big boy pants on for this one, you know? And that's another thing that I look for in the genre as well. I kind of like it when the director rubs your face in the horror. I like that. I'm an Argento fan, so I guess I have to like it, you know? But I feel, like I said, horror, the goal of horror is to make the audience feel uncomfortable. So if the director needs to rub the audience's face in the horror to make them feel uncomfortable, then so be it, you know? And so I recommend Maniac. It's excellent, absolutely excellent movie.
Well, I'll definitely have to look it up.
Do you think that the fact that you do like and have a feel an affinity for the, you know, the more extreme, whatever leads to the discomfort, do you think that's a function of exposure over time? In other words, do you think you've become jaded? Is that something that has accumulated over time, or has that always been there?
No, I don't. You know, that's the one thing. You know, folks, you say, don't you get desensitized? Don't you? Doesn't it? No. Oh goodness, no. My goodness, me, no. Not with a well-told story. Rod Serling once said, "Audiences will sit still for a well-told story." And so, if I'm being told a well-told story, I'm in. And if it frightens me, it's going to frighten me. If it makes me laugh, I'm going to laugh. If it makes me cry, I'm going to cry. I'm not necessarily into bummer movies. I don't go to the movies to get bummed out, you know? I'm not a big
God,
fan of
either.
Bummer films. Nah, I'm not a big fan of bummer films. But nothing wrong with them, you know, go out and have a good time. Go cry your ass off. But that's not my brand of entertainment. But, you know, as long as it's a well-told story, you could scare me. Sure.
That's funny. Hey, I'm interested because we're already at the, believe it or not, the 45-minute mark. Are you going to be developing original films? Because isn't that kind of a lot of what you did at Sci-Fi? Weren't you involved with the development of many, many, many of those Sci-Fi originals?
Yes, I will have to. You've forced it out of me. I have to say that unfortunately, Saturday nights on Sci-Fi Channel were my fault. I accept the responsibility for that, and please forgive me.
Well,
they're
funny,
there,
you know,
and there were a couple of clunkers in there, baby.
Well, you were the supervising end of it, right? I mean, you weren't the actual director. You weren't the writer.
Oh, goodness, no. Well, look, I was given an an alarming amount of creative freedom. You know, and that's a credit to the people in charge. They gave myself and the other people on the team, it wasn't just me, there was a lot of people, a really disturbing amount of creative freedom. And so a lot of things did leap out of my brain and ended up on the screen. I wrote a big chunk of Mansquito.
Oh my God, I love that movie.
I'm credited with the story of the film.
Those movies have a place in horror, and I absolutely love them. I love watching those movies. Let me tell you, my favorite two movies I've seen on Sci-Fi, besides Sharknado, of course, Jersey Shore, Shark Attack. I love those movies. They're not horror in the sense that we're used to, but they have a place in the genre. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Sometimes you need that, especially after watching a very disturbing film. Sometimes you just need a good movie like Mansquito, which I loved. I love those movies. There's a place for
Mansquito was a real pleasure for me, and it was, again, another privilege for me to be allowed. You know, the filmmakers gave me a screen credit, which was, you know, very generous of them. Here, you know, I was just, you know, an executive at a channel, but you know, I did, you know, I had ideas, I had concepts in my head, and I would meet with these producers and say, you know, this is a story that you know I would like to tell, or this is a story that we as a team would like to tell, and each of us as members of the team, we all each got to do one project on our own. And for screen credit as well, my coworkers each did their own individual projects that came to fruition on the channel. So it was, you know, credit to the folks up above because they really allowed us to do a lot. I mean, things that we saw on television, we would make movies out of. And the perfect example, my personal favorite, I think of all the films that I was involved in, my personal favorite, I think, is still Snakehead Terror.
Yeah. good one. Very good.
Snakehead Terror. Now that stars Bruce Boxleiter and Carol Ault. And I'm going to give you guys a little bit of trivia. There's an inside joke in the beginning of the movie. Okay? Because in the very beginning of Snakehead Terror, there's a hunter out in the woods with his dog, and they're the first two victims of the film. And the man's name is Ray, and the dog's name is Hunter. And that was the name of my dog. So it was myself and my dog being the first two victims in the film. If you look at Mansquito, before the convict transforms into a 7-foot mosquito with the big proboscis, his name is Ray as well. So I had to ask, I had to stop asking the producers to stop naming all the characters Ray. They kept, we'll put your name in it. And I said, no, I don't want you, we've got to stop naming people Ray. But it was tons of fun. I got to work with really great filmmakers. I got to make a lot of friends. You know, I mean, pinch yourself, man. I worked with Roger Corman. It doesn't get any better than that.
Wow.
You know, Jersey Shore Shark Attack was one of the last things I worked on. And that was a ton of fun. There's a cameo in the film of a dear, my childhood friend has a part in the movie. My childhood friend is a stand-up comic. His name is Joey Diaz. Joey Coco Diaz. He's a well-known stand-up comic, and he has a part in the movie. You know, and so being able to make things like that happen were very rewarding. But yeah, we had a good old time. I would say I helped develop. Oh goodness, maybe over 100 movies.
Wow. Hey, I'll give you some trivia. My first big website that I developed and owned and, you know, published and blah, blah, blah. We had a guy, one of our writers, who was absolutely obsessed with the sci-fi original movies. And he reviewed every freaking one of them for years. So I bet, unless studiously avoided reading those, you probably saw the sci-fi original review every week on Blog Critics.
Oh, how nice of him. That's so nice. Well, whether he liked the films or not, you know, I don't have that hang up. You know, to me, taste is subjective, and I dabble in a genre that is not for everybody. So I don't necessarily have that hang up if the movies get a bad review or not. You know what I mean? I feel bad for folks if they didn't like the movie. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Well, no, he was a fan. It was up and down. He was very balanced. Some of them he loved, some of them he didn't, you know. But, I mean, the point is, I think you're taking it exactly right. The point is, he had a recurring feature, you know, on our site where he reviewed whatever the new movie was every single week. And he took them very seriously. He was a guy, he was more... certainly more than I am anyway, into the really delving into the technical side of it. So if he felt something wasn't handled very well, technically the CGI just didn't work or, you know, whatever
right.
the case may be, he would mm-hmm. kind of dwell on that as opposed to the story or perhaps even the acting quality. So, I think ultimately the reason besides just the absurdity, but you know better than anyone, there's absurd and there's absurd and there's absurd. I think the reason Sharknado struck such a chord, it was actually pretty well acted. relatively speaking. And
was,
I think
Sharknado was happening, the development of Sharknado was happening right around the time I left. So the early incarnations of the script had these, you know, basically it was raining throughout the film, and every scene was flooded throughout the film.
Well, I thought you meant sharks raining throughout the film. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, but the whole film really takes place in a storm, you know, and it was just page after page after page. It's pouring rain, driving through a flood, having to swim to something, this and that, and I had to, you know, step up and say, guys, man, you know, unless you own an Olympic-sized pool that we're going to shoot this entire movie in, you know, it can't be raining constantly. But, you know, so little things like that that you would throw in, you would try to, you know, think from not just a narrative standpoint, but from a production standpoint of what you can actually
sure.
pull off. The narrative in of itself of Sharknado, for me, isn't what I gravitate towards in the genre. What I gravitate towards in the genre is when there is a nugget of truth to it. The stories that we developed in the early years of the endeavor of the Saturday Night Movies, you know, the stories, the elements, the characters, the creatures were all very Googleable. You know what I mean? You can research it and you can look it up.
Right.
Four movies that we did were all based on current events. Mansquito was about West Nile virus.
Right.
Hammerhead was about stem cell research. The Snake King was about pharmaceutical industry. And Larva, another one of my favorites, Larva, was about mad cow disease. And that's where the story started. You know, we sat down and we said, we should really tell a story about mad cow disease using the creature as a metaphor. And that's the type of horror and that's the type of science fiction that I gravitate towards, is the subtext. So, in the Sharknado world and this and that, I kind of, you know, that's not what gets my juices flowing, is movies like District 9. You know?
Right.
which I still feel is probably one of the best science fiction films of the last 10 years. The metaphor is so strong in that film. It holds a mirror to society. That's when horror and science fiction is at its best, is when it holds a mirror to society.
Right. So, back to the first part of that question, are you going to be developing original films for Screambox?
At the moment, there are no plans to develop original films for Screambox. Original content is going to kind of come in the way of the people, I think, the users themselves. We want to get out and see them. So I think for now, anyway, visiting conventions, visiting film festivals, and really just, this is Screambox isn't just a passive experience like television is. Screambox is interactive. This is the whole point. This idea of passively watching television with no interaction is fading. So really, once we make the transition over to Xbox and Roku and the other devices, it's really going to become a more robust experience. And totally interactive. I really want to hear from the fans. I really want to hear from the folks. Hopefully they'll provide content. User-generated content.
Right.
Who's to say in the 21st century that we all have to be watching Hemlock Grove and Walking Dead when we could be watching each other's content as well? So it's like a great big pool, and everybody needs to jump in.
Very interesting. Sure, you have no lack of ambition. I like that, and I like that this is still kind of the ground floor. And I think it's a very interesting idea. Will you still be on YouTube when you move over to those other platforms as well?
I believe so. Yes. We're still going to be
expanding,
a presence on YouTube. Right. I'm sorry.
You're expanding outward. You're not leaving the one.
No. I am. We are expanding our insidious plan. Like an infection that won't go away. There's not enough antibiotics to save you. Succumb. Succumb. Give in. Come to Screambox.
I like it. Well, what we've never actually done this whole time is tell people exactly where to go to find Screambox. So why don't you do that, Ray?
It's very simple. You go to Screambox. You go to YouTube channels, and it's Screambox TV. And it's a simple search, and you'll find us. We have a Facebook page, Screambox TV, over at Facebook. You could follow me on Twitter if you dare. If listening to this nonsense doesn't have you running for the ibuprofen, I don't know what will. So if you want more of this, follow me on Twitter at RayzillaSX. And you can follow Screambox as well at Screambox TV.
Well,
so go
have a joke.
We've
been interacting on Twitter all day.
After you listen to this nonsense.
We've been interacting joyfully all day long.
Yes, despite the cold weather, I'm still getting the hang of Twitter. Sadly, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I'm still working my way around it. So
it really is.
Follow me to make fun. Follow me to point and laugh if you want.
Not at all. I like Twitter a lot. Facebook for me is a little too generic, and I find it somewhat irritating. But I do like what Teresa's been doing with it, and it's certainly been our Facebook has certainly been taking off lately, and I think is absolutely coming into its own. For me, what's cool about Twitter is, I think, ultimately, the underlying reason that I particularly like it is because I am so prolix that the fact that it forces the brevity and squishes it down to those 140 characters, I think is really a challenge for me personally and one that I enjoy because, man, you got to squish it down. You got to get as much information as you can into that very brief little box. And nowadays, I'm sure you've noticed, since about November, December, I don't know exactly when the technical transformation took place, but now there's a much more emphasis on pictures, on the visuals. So basically, I don't do a tweet at all unless we're doing something like this show where, you know, we're both kind of live tweeting our own show here, or else if I am literally live tweeting, for example, a TV show, there's just no time, you know, to insert the picture. But if any other tweet throughout the day, you know, my standalone tweets, as it were, every one of them has a picture. And what that's done is it really has increased the interactivity I have with my followers. And it brings in lots of new followers because people, you know, the internet is just such a visual medium.
Yeah.
And now that Twitter, you know, so what's changed is those pictures now show up in everyone's feed. They were there before, but you had to actually, you know, click on that tweet to see the picture. Now they actually show up in the flow of everyone's feed. So that's really made a big difference. So not only now are you limited to the 140 characters, but what I'm doing, I'm usually linking to something and I'm putting in a picture. So the link and the picture, there's about 50. So I'm really down to under 100 characters. So, you know,
well,
it
you,
really
yeah,
is
you
an
shrink,
exercise
you shrink
in
the
brevity.
URL, right? You at least shrink the URL and save.
Yeah, it does automatically, but it still ends up taking, you know, maybe 20 or so characters. It can be, the URL can be, you know, 100 characters long, and it does shrink it down. But,
it's
somewhere around.
For you, if you think it's tough for you, you know, just listen to this interview. And then you get a good idea how hard it is for me. So,
well, that's what I'm saying, though. I think you'll really have fun with it and grow into it because it is a challenge. And, you know, you learn the shortcuts. I personally, being a writer, you know, per se, I mean, that's fundamentally, I guess, what I am. I don't take a lot of the message shorthand. I use real words for the most part. But, you know, it's fun, and you learn to take the shortcuts where you can. And then it's just a matter of finding an audience. And I have no doubt that you will find your audience and it will grow. And it's a really great way to kind of, you know, to cross-promote. And it's fun because you really can put, you know, again, it's a challenge to try to put your personality into those little, tiny, brief.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
that's
been the challenge.
The challenge.
That has
so
been
have fun with it,
challenge.
And I will be happy to support you to the best of my ability.
Oh, thanks. That'd be great.
No problem.
There have been a few learning curves for me. And you know, I think some of them I'm doing okay on, and some of them, you know, I could probably be doing better. But that's the challenge of it, and that's the fun of it. The part that reminds me of the early days of Sci-Fi Channel. We stumbled our way, you know, through that as well. We launched in September of 1992. That was was 3 years before Windows 95 came out, which really just radically changed everything. Okay,
right.
So we operated for 3 years like that. We couldn't even see the channel in our building when
well,
we launched
it. I mean,
Time
I didn't
Warner
know it was around
didn't
that
carry
far back.
Us. So we
I didn't
were
really
programming
become
a network that we couldn't watch.
Yeah, that's. There's some irony there, by golly. I probably really became aware of it, probably almost 10 years later. It was probably the early 00s before I was really kind of paying attention to it.
Well, the fans would call in and tell us when we were screwing up because we couldn't see what we were doing.
That really is funny.
I'll tell you a quick true story. The early days of sci-fi, one of my responsibilities was to make sure, and my anal retentive mind wouldn't allow me to do anything else, but to make sure that the shows ran in their proper sequence. Okay? Just because a TV series, the episodes had episode numbers, it didn't necessarily mean that you ran the episode numbers in order. That was their production number. That was the order in which they were shot, not necessarily the order in which they were broadcast. So it was my responsibility to make sure that continuity was tight and that everything ran well. One of the shows that we began running was the original Dark Shadows. Okay. Before the appearance of there was about 200 episodes produced of Dark Shadows before Barnabas Collins appeared. Okay.
Wow.
Before Barnabas appeared, it was still a spooky, mystery, ghosty type soap opera. But Dan Curtis was getting pressure. You know, ratings were down. Dan Curtis was getting pressure from the networks to beef things up, and so he invented the character of Barnabas Collins, and the series took off. So, in the early days of sci-fi, when we just launched, we were running those first initial 200 episodes, the pre-Barnabas episodes, we called them. Okay? Well, someone in our building, in our operations building, pulled the wrong tape. And instead of playing, you know, episode 0009, they played episode 9. And that episode had Barnabas Collins in it. For storytelling, it's a soap opera, okay? So the continuity is really tight.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So we run the first 8 episodes, and then all of a sudden, you know, here comes Barnabas, you know, out of nowhere, you know? And our phones light up in the office. And it's people, I don't know how they got our number, but it was people calling in telling us, you're showing the wrong episode of Dark Shadows, screaming at us on the phone.
Well, that proved that they were engaged.
Yes. Oh, we were thrilled. Someone was watching. They were complaining, but they were watching. And we couldn't do anything about it because the episode was already airing. And you know, so I always refer to that day as the premature resurrection of Barnabas Collins.
That's a great name. I love that.
Yes. That,
yeah, well, that was probably quite jarring, wasn't it, for them?
Yes, because they're following the show, and all of a sudden, bam, there's Barnabas. And we had people call in and complain. We got letters from prisons. We got a lot of prison letters. Kentucky Correctional Facility. We were very popular in Kentucky Correctional Facility.
It's good to know your audience.
It's a true story. It's a true story.
Well, I'll tell you, things have changed, and obviously that station, that channel has really, really grown. I'll tell you something. I will admit something else, and then I guess we need to go. What happens is it stops being live at 11, but the recording keeps going. So anyone listening it's fine. It's fine because probably as much as 90% of our listeners listen to the recording, the streamed version. Sometimes it's probably more than 90% even. So
well,
it's no problem.
Well,
but anyway, I was going to say,
if you're listening at this point in the conversation, thank you for hanging in there, folks. You rock.
They do rock. They absolutely rock. And,
rock out loud, baby.
What I was going to say is I'm older than you, believe it or not, and I watched the original Dark Shadows when it first ran. That's how old I am.
Oh, me too. When I was a little kid, I used to run home.
I was a kid.
I think it used to be – was it like on 3 or 3:30? Was it on 3:30?
Yeah, it was right after school. Yep, right after school.
Because I used to run home from school. My grammar school was very close to my house. And I used to run home from school to catch Barnabas on TV. You used to beat the crap out of – boy, now when you go back and you watch the episodes, you got to crack up. Poor Willie. Man, did Barnabas beat the snot out of him with that cane.
Was always somewhat ambivalent, you know, because it was a quote-unquote soap opera. But man, it was so much cooler. You know, I remember, I still have this vivid memory whenever I think of Dark Shadows. One episode ending with the music, you know, the intense organ, almost soap opera, but horror music, and showing a skull. Remember, a skull. Just that's all you saw on the screen of the music going, da-da-da, and it's a skull. I remember that startled me. You know, I was about, you know, 8, 9, whatever I was. I don't know. I was born in 58.
Ah, how about that?
So I've been around.
We used to crack up in the office at Sci-Fi because we would have, once we were able to watch the channel, we would have the channel on. You know, and there would be Barnabas. You know, we'd always watch Barnabas beat the crap out of Willie. And he'd whack up with the frigging cane, you know.
That was a voice, too, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic. And then Wonder Woman. Then we ran Wonder Woman, and all work would come to a halt because Wonder Woman would get tied up in every episode. You know, so we're like, hey, they're tying up Wonder Woman. And then we would just all go into one cubicle and watch, you know.
That's the other end of the ogling spectrum. All right, well, Ray, what a pleasure speaking with you, and I hope we absolutely stay in touch. We are going to keep doing giveaways for a whole another week on you know, giving away subscriptions, so we will certainly be in touch that way. But I think what you're doing is really cool and very interesting and fun and young and vibrant, and I think they're very lucky to have you. Because it really does take someone
very
to curate
nice of you
it. I think it takes someone to curate it and really kind of lead the charge. And clearly, on the serious side, probably no one really does care as much as you do. So that counts.
Well, it's a blessing and a curse, you know. some nights I wake up screaming.
I think
what
it's great.
I
think it's
know?
Great. And you're in on the ground floor, and there's just no reason why it won't take off. And I don't think it'll take as long as it took Sci-Fi.
It's tremendously, tremendously exciting to be a part of, and again, to a genre that matters to me, is the cherry on top. That's the bonus. But thank you for saying so. It's very nice of you. This was wonderful. I would love to come back anytime. You know, I'm available for weddings, bar mitzvahs. If you're having your driveway paved, give me a call. I'll stand on my head and make such a face.
Conversely, we would probably be very interested, as things progress and move along, of being involved on your end, you know. So,
yes,
on the video end.
All things Xbox. When Xbox happens, I think Xbox and Roku, I use the word robust, and I mean it. I think that the channel really will truly
it sounds
begin
great.
To
and
unfold.
I'm excited to see how things will be unfolding over just the next few months. And it sounds like, you know, a year from now, it will be unrecognizable. I bet it will have really exploded.
In a good way.
In a good way. Yep. That's what I meant. All right. Thanks so much, Ray.
Thank you
really
so
enjoyed
much.
It.
Teresa's
absolutely.
Still there?
No, I think we lost her for some reason.
Oh, no.
It actually happened last week, too. We lost her right at the 11 o'clock. I don't know if something's going on with on the technical side, or she just says, screw it, and leaves.
Thank you, Teresa. It was lovely speaking with you. You made entirely
I'm
too
not
much
sure
noise.
Which it is.
Try and keep it down next time, all right? Because, you know, I'm trying to talk
She's
here.
She's got kids. She's got younger kids, and maybe it's too loud, or I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. I forgot to ask her last week, but I will definitely remember to ask this week. Hey, did you just leave, or were you cut off? So we'll see what that comes down to. But yes, absolutely. Let's stay in touch, and I will certainly keep an eye on things. And I think it's fun.
Please do.
And I think you're absolutely filling a niche. You're filling a hole, and I mean, hey, that's what you know. That's the way of the future. That's what entrepreneurism is about, is you find holes and you fill them.
Yeah, the Pied Piper of horror.
All right. Have a great evening. Have
Thank you for having me.
Great week.
And
absolutely, we'll be really happy to have you on again, you know, down the line, not too far. It'll be lots of fun.
Oh, you just let me know. And everybody, thank you for listening, folks. Thank you.
All right. Good evening. Have a great week, everybody.